meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning into the Winds of Change. It's Wednesday, and you know what that means. Another brain-wrinkling Wednesday here with your friend, Father Tom Coys.
Wow.
Indeed.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah. My brain's been wrinkled a lot with the challenges that we face as people of God, as people trying to build, sustain, and maybe build better a society that is harmonious and that is God-fearing and that is prosperous as humanly possible. I started something last week, which I have to continue this week. I hope you caught last week's show. If not, let me just give a reminder. A reminder and an invitation, because this is a project I'm working on, a play, a dramatic historical play from the American Civil War era, which is, of course, the 1860s. And the argument, of course, back then was about slavery. Today we're in a huge argument, huge debate. Very, very similar regarding the right to life, okay? So what I started last week was a speech that will be part of a historical play out at Little St. James Church on the southwest suburbs, St. James's SAG. It's going to be in July, the end of July, July 23rd. Mark your calendar. We'll have things up on our website, historicstjames.com. Anyways, the way this came down was I happened to stumble upon Bishop Verreaux's sermon. He was from the South during the Civil War, and he wrote an incredibly long and very passionate and very, very interesting defense of the South, and tried to explain why slavery should not be outlawed. And he went on to explain how it can be done civilly or in the Christian spirit if the slaves are treated well and nicely and all that. But he didn't condemn slavery. He didn't see it as something anti-Christian, as we all do now. It's very interesting, and so that big debate over whether the black man is a person or not spills over today to whether the unborn fetus is a person or not. So, I want to share with you the ideas that were presented by the religious of the North in accepting the idea that slavery should be outlawed. And it can't be reformed just by treating slaves well. Like Lincoln Abraham Lincoln said, even though people say that it's a good institution, no one ever took it upon themselves, as it were. And so what the argument that a Protestant minister by the name of Frothingham from Massachusetts, he spells out very wisely what he calls the laissez-faire argument of many of the people that were in favor of stopping Lincoln. I'll say that. Obviously, the people in the South were interested in stopping Lincoln because they wanted to keep their unique institutions. But a lot of people in the North wanted to stop Lincoln because they thought it's not worth fighting about. Just leave him alone. And in that, my friends, I see a tremendous lesson for us today, because there are, of course, a lot of people who would just be repulsed about what happens with legalized abortion. But there's a lot of people who kind of know it's not good. They kind of know it's wrong. But like a lot of things, you don't get involved in trying to stop someone from doing something wrong if it's a slight error, a slight wrong. It's not a major wrong, and it's very, very tempting to just say, let things be. So what I want to do here is pick up the speech that, in my little play, Bishop Purcell from Cincinnati gives as to defend the cause of the North, and especially to Christianize why does a good Christian feel justified in trying to counteract the just leave him alone type argument. And he picks out a very interesting line from the Old Testament, from the book of Hosea. And he says that this line can be used in two different ways, one in a good way, one in a bad way. We'll keep it like that. And then he compares it, of course, to our Lord's, well, maybe not of course, but it's a very interesting combination, this line from Hosea, which is, Ephraim is joined to idols, let him alone. Ephraim, of course, is one of the tribes of Judah, the youngest one at that, and a small one. I'm not exactly sure all the sizes of the tribes, but anyways, he was the tribe of Ephraim, became corrupted by the pagan gods of the neighboring nations. And so the people of Ephraim, the tribe of Ephraim, was joined to idols. And so in Hosea, we hear this injunction, leave him alone. And so is that the wise? Is that the godly approach? Well, he's Reverend Frothingham is using it for the slavery issue, and I'm proposing that we discuss it or analyze it in terms of the right to life issue, right? So he compares it to our Lord's words in the Sermon on the Mount, I've turned the other cheek, right? Turning the other cheek is not, it's encouraging us Christians to not fight. it's allowing the evil force to hit us, and we don't hit back. That's the typical nonviolent person opposed to any kind of war or any kind of violence, right? And who of us is for any kind of violence or for any kind of war? But that doesn't mean there are not some forms of war that we would support, and there are not some forms of violence that we wouldn't engage in the proper time. So Bishop Purcell, and I join him with Frothingham, he says that here we have two different interpretations of this same scriptural passage from Hosea. Ephraim is joined to idols, let him alone. So even if you're going to agree that slavery is bad or that abortion is bad, you could still take this position, which is kind of the very popular position, a kind of a middle-of-the-road position, if you will, leave them alone. So this doctrine can be quoted and used by wise and wise men for noble purposes. But foolish and ignoble people have perverted to their own ignoble and foolish ends. So he calls this the doctrine of laissez-faire. And he has a very precious explanation about how the laissez-faire doctrine arose from England, from a English theologian / economist by the name of Adam Smith, who, interesting enough, is the guy I picked for my master's degree thesis when I was studying philosophy. And we all know of Adam Smith primarily for his economic work, and especially his work called The Wealth of Nations. But he was really a theologian, a theology teacher, and he had a lot to say about morality in different ways. And he was explaining that the situation where government becomes so big and is trying to manage everything, people were crying, "Let us alone," meaning you, government, let us alone, because we will do a good job on our own. As a matter of fact, if the job that the hierarchs were doing, in that case, sometimes noblemen, sometimes kings, sometimes parliaments and all that, if they were producing a good and, shall we say, holy society, there would be no need for that cry, "Let us alone." But as things get out of hand, it becomes a debate between which rules and which what order of society is best. And so, now he's going to say this is part of what the anti-slavery people have to deal with: is let slavery alone, or let abortion rights alone. Is that the godly position? So we go from there, and let's see. It is the doctrine that meant not the giving up of all responsibility, not an abandonment of moral control over unruly elements. It is a doctrine that meant work, business, self-possession, self-help, taking hold of things by the right handle, and regulating things according to the rules of a well-formed conscience. That's Adam Smith, a la Frothingham, a la Bishop Purcell. And notice how that phrase that is so much a part of Catholic catechism, a well-formed conscience, and that's the heart of the matter. How do you get a well-formed conscience, and what is a well-formed conscience? And so we'll go on here a little bit more. These men, and especially through the writings of Reverend Frothingham, says, "This was the doctrine of laissez-faire, let us alone, and we will do our work. We will educate and cultivate and develop our society." So, but to come back to Ephraim was one of the tribes which had cast off its allegiance to the law of God and had been faithless to its sacred traditions. Hosea says, "Pay no attention to him, no matter what becomes of him. Leave him in the way either of enmity or friendship." So you can stop your attempts to change Ephraim and their godless ways. You can stop your attempt to change him either by calling him your enemy and having little to nothing to do with him, or you can maintain a friendship and just not try to change anything about them, which is kind of the model today, isn't it? We say, well, just be friendly with everyone, even though somebody may be promoting a much worse moral principles than someone else. So allow me to try to apply Hosea to our time. This is the 1860s. Let us ask, what reasons would God have in defense of such a laissez-faire piece of advice? So he's going to give reasons why to let someone alone and not try to change the slavery issue, and again, in our time, change the right to abortion issue. He would be likely to say, let Ephraim alone because his idolatry is none of our business. The tribes are independent tribes. If one of them chooses to separate himself from the rest, to adopt a new social system, to adore Baal instead of the Lord God, that is his affair, not yours or mine. The very thing the English papers say today about Carolina and Mississippi, the very thing the secessionists say, the very thing the idle conservative says, the very thing the selfish citizen says of the foolish, vicious, and abandoned people who give themselves up to profligacy, immorality, and irreligion. If people choose to be ignorant, foolish, and suicidal, whose concern is it but their own? It is, in short, the argument of the thoughtless. So he's saying, he's describing well the people who didn't want to fight to free slaves, and just saying it's none of our business, so that's one way to interpret the scriptural quote from Hosea. He goes on, it is none of my business that a man does not choose to send his children to school, but lets them play about in the streets. Okay, so he's using an analogy here. Okay, you say we should let someone just pursue idols and make his own moral principles, as it were. Let us say that someone, your neighbor, chooses not to send their children to school. And what he means by that is it doesn't mean homeschooling. He means not having any education at all. But lets them play about in the streets. But what if his children entice mine to play with them, beset them on their way to school and tempt them to play truant, or waylay them as they come home from school and teach them vagrant habits and vagrant vices. So he's pointing out that someone's other bad habits can influence us. It's not so cut and dry to say, let them alone, for it's only their business and it doesn't touch my business. So he's touching on a very key aspect of community or societal light in general. And so I got to relate something that I listened to Alan Dershowitz's little podcast. You know, many of you know him. He's been a strong legal voice, a very liberal guy, very proponent of abortion rights, but he's changing his mind a little bit. Okay, well, let's take a little break here. I'll come back with that when we come back. This is Father Tom Coy sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You are listening to the new Chicagoland Catholic radio voice of EWTN, 88.5 FM and WNDZ, 750 AM. God bless you.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
As you are hearing the strains of the Ukrainian national anthem, Ukraine is under attack, fighting for its very existence. We must appeal to our Blessed Mother for her intercession and to Saint Michael the Archangel, captain of the heavenly hosts and patron saint of Ukraine, in defense of the nation from evil oppression. Beyond prayer, you can help in providing humanitarian assistance by donating to any of the following charitable Catholic organizations. Aid to the Church in Need. Donate at churchinneed.org. Caritas Internationalists. Donate at caritas.org. The Catholic Near East Welfare Association, CNEWA. Donate at cnewa.org. Ukrainian Catholic University Foundation Emergency Fund, which supports Ukrainian Catholic University's humanitarian aid efforts in Ukraine. Donate at ucufoundation.org. Pray for our brothers and sisters in Ukraine and donate what you can. God bless you.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. As I tried to tease you before that little wonderful break, I was listening to an Alan Dershowitz podcast, and it's very interesting from my perspective because he supports abortion rights for many years. I tend not to appreciate his full philosophy and conclusions, but he's in a unique position because he's criticizing those who are criticizing the SCOTUS leaked potential decision, namely that the Roe versus Wade decision will be kicked back to the states so that people in the states will have to debate it anew again. So he's opening his mind to the fact that there may be a good reason for defending the right to life of an unborn child. But notice, I'll play in a minute. Notice what he doesn't say. I'll say it this way. He's opening a door, which I appreciate, and I hope he has some influence with and over people that would agree with him in the right to abortion, to at least be open to debate again, as it were. But there's something he's not saying, and I wonder if you're going to pick it up the way I seen. Here's him in just a recent.
After the first month or the first 2 months or 3 months, the one thing everybody has to admit is that a fetus is a something. It's a something. And people have the right to be concerned about that something. An old friend of mine named Florence Kennedy, who was one of the leaders of the abortion rights movement back in the, literally in the 1960s and early 70s, famously said and repeatedly said that no court should have to permit a woman to have an abortion any more than they should have to permit a woman to have an appendectomy. She repeatedly compared the fetus with an appendix or tonsils that are removed. And of course, if we're talking about an appendectomy or a tonsillectomy, then it's a victimless right. No appendix or tonsil has the right to be protected by the state. But if you believe that the fetus is different than an appendix, the fetus is different than tonsils, if you believe that it is a something, not a nothing, and remember, an appendix is a nothing, a tonsil is a nothing. Nobody ever regretted having to remove an appendix if the operation went successfully.
Isn't that interesting? So he's opening a door to the idea that you can legitimately be concerned over the fetus, and he's saying that it's radically different than an appendix. Though I think philosophically or metaphysically, he's misusing the word nothing in the sense that saying the appendix is nothing, because what he's not, he doesn't have a good handle on, is the concept of person. Did you get that? What he is not saying. He's saying something very good, that it's something, but he doesn't seem to be able to go about and say that it is a person. And of course, he's going to try to avoid that issue because he wants to still promote the right to an abortion. So if we could see through, and I'll applaud him for criticizing his former friend in the early days of the abortion rights campaigns that was saying, you know, you shouldn't need a court to give you permission to have take your appendix out or your tonsils out, where you do need a court's permission to take a baby out. But of course, he's not using that term, baby, right? So how does this fit into what Bishop Purcell is saying in his arguments to continue with the fight to free the slaves? Because notice that, let's come back and notice that the laissez-faire, the let them alone strategy, is based on the idea that it has nothing to do with me. Your having slaves has nothing to do with my life. Your having an abortion has nothing to do with my life. They're completely separate. But he wisely says, but what about the man who lets his children play and doesn't send them to school? What if they start influencing my children? Then all of a sudden it does affect me. And we can certainly see how that comes into play if the abortion rights issue is if it's planting bad moral principles in someone else, can those bad moral principles spill out into other parts of society and not? So okay, here's the second reason why someone might take the let them alone policy and not be, you know, against God or not be a bad strategy, he says. Secondly, it may be urged that Ephraim should be let alone because he is incorrigible, and all attempts to interfere with him would make him no better and perhaps might make him worse. This can be a good reason if said with earnest interest in our brother's welfare. Let me translate that too. It's very wise because you could say, you know, you don't want to pick a fight with someone who's pro-choice. You don't want to interfere with their way of thinking because they're incorrigible. They're unreasonable. They're not going to debate or discuss with you. It's just going to provoke them to be worse. And boy, anybody who's been to Washington, D.C. for the March for Life, anybody who's prayed out at an abortion clinic, anybody who's been confronted by real radical pro-choicers, you know exactly what he's talking about. They're incorrigible. So in some ways, what this principle of let them alone, it's being applied to the pro-choice person on the sidewalk that's trying to engage the pro-life person, but you know it's just going to make them worse, and they're incorrigible, and all attempts to interfere with that person would make them no better, perhaps might make them worse, okay? So are we not all too ready to take for granted that our brother is incorrigible, that he has committed himself to his idolatry more complete than he is? Can we say that any man's fault is absolutely incorrigible? What he's saying there, in referring to Ephraim and their following the idols, say, yes, many are incorrigible. Many are completely beyond dialogue. Many are completely ready to attack you instead of listen to you. But he's opening the door. He says, a Christian can certainly put his faith in a possibility that they would be listening, that they would open their minds. And, of course, many sidewalk counselors in the Right to Life movement know that when you go to approach a couple or a girl going in for an abortion, they will most likely just swear at you or say, get lost, get out of my way, none of your business. But what Bishop Purcell is saying here is, well, no, can we say that any man's fault is absolutely incorrigible? They may be in the wrong, but are they absolutely unreasonable? You keep open the idea that they may be reasonable. And those sidewalk counselors who have had success in talking a girl out of an abortion prove the point that all those who are wrong are not absolutely incorrigible. Some people are willing to listen and willing to admit a mistake, as it were. So,
wow.
That's
you just wrinkled my brain, man.
That certainly is a brain wrinkler. So let me go a little bit more, and we'll do our second break here, Nick, in just a minute. So he goes on, he says, if I could believe that, I should show but little faith in the author of human nature. Believe what? If I could believe that every person who's in the wrong is absolutely unreachable, every person in the wrong is totally irrational, and he uses the word incorrigible. I'll use the word rigid. Maybe that's the word. A lot of times conservatives are given that title, right? But certainly the person going in for an abortion who's not open at all to the advice of the pro-life person is rigid, right? If I could believe that, I should show but little faith in the author of human nature, God, as it were. I should disbelieve in his infinite power and goodness to change us. I do not suppose God is authorizing the abandonment of the man to his sin as an incorrigible person. I understand God to be directing that a new order of influences to be brought to bear on him. Everything is to be done for him, as for one who is wholly uninstructed. So far from being let alone, he is to be put back into the primary school of experience and tutored like a difficult child. Did Jesus treat heathen men as those with whom he had nothing to do? That's the great key right there. Did Jesus treat people he disagreed with in the have nothing to do with them, let them alone attitude? On the contrary, Jesus lavished upon them a more individual attention and went very far out of his way to find them and reclaim them. It is so much less trouble to let them alone, so much less expensive too, for when letting alone passes for the wisest policy, we let our greatest resources of conviction and conversion slumber until they sleep their last sleep, while the evil they may have exterminated once swells and multiplies and establishes itself too firmly for any human agency to remove it. That an evil seems to us incorrigible is therefore no good ground or reason for letting it alone. Isn't that beautiful? That's kind of the attitude. That's the charitable attitude, and it's not exactly, it's not following the strict let them alone policy. Okay, let's take another break here. I'm going to continue with this Bishop Purcell, Reverend Frothingham speech that will be delivered at St. James of the SAG in July, July 23rd. Mark your calendar. We'll have more information on that later in the summer. I'm Father Tom Coy's guest host on the Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ and 88.5 FM WFSI.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
I'm Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Koska, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and you are listening to
The Winds of Change. All these years, you've been enjoying Winds of Change, Monday through Friday, on AM 750 WNDZ. And then, on Friday, you have to wait 2 days to hear Winds of Change. But take heart, because now you can hear Winds of Change on Catholic Radio 88.5 FM WFSI for Northern Chicagoland. That's Saturday mornings at 10, except on first Saturdays. Now, don't you feel better?
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm Father Tom Coyes on the Winds of Change. I've been trying to use a very insightful, very powerful speech that was given during the American Civil War to encourage people to get off the fence. I guess that's how I'll put it. He's trying to explain how the let things alone, let things stay as they are, is not the true Christian approach, which is. And he just said before the break, it's certainly easier.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Exactly. So here's the third, I'll call it temptation, to take the let things alone, don't involve yourself in this debate or this question. And he says this could be a reason that one would hold that position, even though in his day, one was against slavery. In our day, one would be against abortion. You could say, don't just leave them alone, because in time, they will put an end to their own offense. The idolatry, and this is going back to Ephraim from the Old Testament, the idolatry to which he is joined is so miserable and debasing a thing, it brings along with it so many abuses and turpitudes that it will do its own work fully, surely, and full soon, if permitted to run to its consequences. It is too deeply infected with every element of corruption to live long, and if allowed, it will stab itself with a more fatal weapon than you can wield against it. It's an interesting position, right? And it's tempting. Actually, in the Civil War, many were saying that. Actually, Abraham Lincoln figured that, you know, if we could just prevent the spread of slavery, then it'll die out on its own. Or you could, there was hope that the South would pass their own laws against slavery. That's what Bishop Purcell here is trying to say is a potentially reasonable reason why you would take the just let things alone as they are. You could see that it's tempting to think that, and it's a great hope in human nature, but with slavery, it wasn't shrinking, it was only growing, and those who were profiting from it were only wanted to profit more. So it wasn't
Whoa.
Working.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It is wrinkled. I think that's exactly the position of the founding fathers, like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and those gang. That's exactly what they were hoping, that it would die out on its own. Of course, fast forward 60 years, 70 years, 80 years, and it wasn't doing that. So I'm going to go on and quote here again, Purcell, Bishop Purcell. All this may be very true, but the objection to it is this, that while evil does contain in itself the elements of its own decay and defeat, these corrective elements do their office very slowly. They take ages and ages to accomplish their healing mission, and they accomplish it at length at the expense of multitudes of most precious lives. No doubt poor Ephraim's idol will prove itself a foul abomination one of these days, but by the time it does so, it will have been the death of poor Ephraim and a good many more, less guilty than him. Do not leave it alone, therefore, if there is any hope that you may be able to stop it. Besides, do you wish Ephraim to be destroyed and not saved? Do you not let the suicide alone? Why should you let the sinner alone? Why let alone the man or woman who holds the vice or the guilt, which is fast destroying the immortal soul? And so the third argument for letting Ephraim alone falls dead. So if we could appreciate what he's saying here, I think it's so brilliant, because we are tempted to think exactly what he's saying. They'll find out the bad on their own. And with the right to abortion, we could say, oh, it ruins so many lives, and people feel terrible, I guess you could say. The negative fallbacks are so obvious that they'll figure it out eventually, but it's just getting worse and worse. The aberration of not seeing the child in the womb as a child is walking in tandem with the aberration of just the sexual act in general, and where we get the gay rights issue, the transgender issues, et cetera, the lack of seeing the fullness of the truth in the one area has been spilling over and growing. And so more and more people are their mortal souls are being in danger. So, of course, you have to believe that God would judge us by such actions, which, of course, is what we all can and should believe in. With someone who doesn't believe in that, you could see how, maybe not that they're going to hell, but that their life is hell. You don't have to believe in hell to believe life is hell. And that sometimes is very obvious, and the turning away from bad habits or bad decisions and turning back to a more Christian understanding of relationships is what is needed. Okay, so let's go here. Now, lastly, there remains this. As if well let alone, Ephraim will see the folly of his own course. And like the prodigal son in the parable of the prodigal son, will return to his home a penitent man. If you interfere with him, he may be vexed and angry. His vanity be piqued. His pride may be wounded. He will perhaps persist in his evil career from sheer determination to have his own way and will deliberately ruin himself in order to spite his unwise but well-meaning physicians. Let him alone, and he will discover his error for himself and will have no hesitation in repenting of it. Meddle with him, and you will put him on the defensive. This is force. There is force in this suggestion. So, yeah, we all know that if you meddle in someone else's moral issues, they're not gonna repent. They're not gonna change their mind. They're not gonna say you were right, I was wrong. They're just gonna become more stubborn. I have an interesting twist to that little insight into human psychology or human nature, as it were. Sometimes when I'm counseling or working with a young couple who are planning to get married, and it seems obvious from my side of the desk.
Although, I am the gift.
Oh, there's many gifts. Well, and thinking of marriage, of course, a husband and wife are gifts to each other, right? Anyways, but I'm just using this little twist to illustrate that Bishop Purcell here is onto something spans the ages, right? It's not just something from years gone by. So imagine me helping two people get married and going through sometimes the inventories, the surveys that we ask, the questions that we, especially if they study theology of the body, and I try to teach them the Catholic understanding of human sexuality. And anyways, it seems clear that they're not meant for each other. Or it doesn't even have to be in sexual morality. It could be, it's clear that someone is an alcoholic and they're not going to change. It's clear that one of them has a much different attitude about marriage. It could be the man sees his wife as his plaything or his slave, or the woman sees the man as her plaything or slave, whatever. Anyways, so sometimes I will take the risk and say, you guys shouldn't get married, which is a very risky thing for a priest to say, because that throws in a lot of complications. And of course, they are already paid for their hall and all the rest, and it's a terrible thing to suggest. Sometimes I'll suggest that, even though I know I'm not going to cancel the wedding, that people have a right to get married, even if they're going to enter into a bad marriage. But sometimes I'll say that because I know that they're going to be mad at me by saying this marriage isn't going to last. So if they're mad at me for saying this marriage isn't going to last, they're going to stick together to spite me. Does that make any sense? That they will say, by George, we are meant for each other. We are going to get married, and we don't care what any stupid priest is going to say that we shouldn't get married. And just to prove you wrong, Father Tom, we're going to stay married for the rest of our lives. I kind of take that as a victory in my book, even though they might be mad at me, as it were. I'll take it as helping people work out their problems and stick it out. If it's not the end of their life, or I've said a number of times, the times that I will tell a couple that is on the brink of divorce, I'll say, I want you to try to reconcile to the best of your ability, unless staying with this person is dragging you to hell. The goal over everything is to get to heaven and avoid hell. And sometimes people can be so mean and nasty to each other that the mean and nasty evilness of one is almost transferred to the other. And you become a mean and nasty person that you weren't before, because the influence of the other is so powerful. And then you're in danger of really losing your soul. So anyways, let's go back to Bishop Purcell here. I want to get back. I want to see if I can let's see. So the let alone policy has been very strictly pursued in regard to the institution of slavery. The Constitution has protected it from assault from the beginning. The government has thrown over it its powerful shield. The public sentiment of the South at times apologizes for it, but still the public sentiment of the North has never risen to the point of pronouncing it a sin or an evil, or so much as a mistake. So there again, it's a reference to the middle of the roaders who might apologize. They sort of feel bad that abortion's part of our society, but they're not moved by it enough to say it's an evil that is hurting society. I like to help people see that moral principles spring from fonts of moral decisions, and the area of human sexuality is like the source of the Mississippi River. We all know that this Mississippi River, which starts way up in Minnesota, is a small little creek that I think you can even jump over. And we all know that it's a huge river that empties out into the Gulf of Mexico. The areas of human sexuality is like the spring, the origins of the Mississippi River. It starts out like a small, there may be a small mistake, but it's at a very crucial part of life. And the moral principles that you accept, the moral principles that a wrong decision, I'll just say it, in the bedroom makes, spill out into so much other parts of life and other parts of society. That's why that quote from, or the little clip from Alan Dershowitz, who's right in saying that we have a right to be concerned about the thing. He calls it the thing. He doesn't want to call it a person or a baby. But God bless him for saying we have a right to be concerned about it. But I think he's missing this point that area of life affects morals in general in society, and morals in general in society affects everyone. You could see how that over and over again, it doesn't seem to reach a pinnacle. There's just always more and more crazy things coming out in the areas of sexual morality, but also in the areas of just plain violence. I'm talking to you here on a Wednesday, which is the day after one of the other shootings in Texas. And if I could explain how there's a connection between bad moral principles that start in the heart and soul of a man, or shall we be so graphic as to say in the bedroom, and it spills over, and the same kind of moral relativism. If it's moral relativism that is planted in the bedroom, it's certainly moral relativism that is animating a stupid, idiotic monster who shoots up children. He thinks he's doing something right. And I think that's a... Should we take one more break here, Nick? We got our hour goes so fast, but we always have such wonderful announcements and everything. We can't miss them. And I'll try to wrap this up a little bit when we come back. I'm Father Tom Coy's guest host on The Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WFSI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ and on 88.5 FM WFSI.
As you are hearing the strains of the Ukrainian national anthem, Ukraine is under attack, fighting for its very existence. We must appeal to our Blessed Mother for her intercession and to Saint Michael the Archangel, Captain of the Heavenly Hosts and Patron Saint of Ukraine, in defense of the nation from evil oppression. Beyond prayer, you can help in providing humanitarian assistance by donating to any of the following charitable Catholic organizations. Aid to the Church in Need. Donate at churchinneed.org. Caritas Internationalists. Donate at caritas.org. The Catholic Near East Welfare Association, CNEWA. Donate at CNEWA.org. Ukrainian Catholic University Foundation Emergency Fund, which supports Ukrainian Catholic University's humanitarian aid efforts in Ukraine. Donate at UCUFoundation.org. Pray for our brothers and sisters in Ukraine and donate what you can. God bless you.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
Watch how you pray. People are watching you pray.
And now, a Szeptycki Institute Minute with Father Peter Galadza.
In a pastoral letter on church singing, Andrzej Szeptycki once wrote, "In sung prayer, especially in the sung divine office, the Holy Church provides people with a kind of augmentation of the gospel proclamation. The very appearance of people who are praying encourages others to imitate them. And their appearance, the words and the style, also teach others how to pray. To perform the divine office, as well as all church singing in a holy way, is one of the many ways that we can cause the name of our Most High God, the Heavenly Father, to be glorified even with our limited abilities."
To learn about degree programs in Eastern Christian Studies, visit SzeptyckiInstitute.ca. That's S-H-E-P-T-Y-T-S-K-Y Institute.ca.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Father Tom Coyes on the Winds of Change. I love that little last announcement there. Chanting and singing and prayer is really lifts up the soul. How can you not see that? So, the craziness. What I would like everyone to, I'd like to coin a new phrase, or I don't know if it's a new phrase, but we should use it a lot when discussing things like school shootings or so. I think we should say, can we not see that there's systemic moral relativism? We have a problem in our society with systemic moral relativism. A lot of people like that word systemic when it comes to racism. There's a systemic problem, and means it's not any, it's rooted in our laws, it's rooting in a culture, and we're all involved in it. It's systemic. We have to change some laws, we have to change some policies, et cetera, to eradicate racism. Well, I think the same should be said, and it's even more powerful to say there's a systemic moral relativism. Because if moral relativism is the right way to think in little things, then how could it not be the cause of a growing sense that it's okay in bigger things? You remember that quote in the scriptures, if you're trusted with little things, then you'll be entrusted with greater things. And that same thing could be said about the way principles gotten wrong in a small area. And I do concede the fact that it's a small area in the bedroom, and in a lot of ways it's not radically affecting your neighbor, but it's a drip-by-drip way that it's affecting your moral thought process. And so if there's moral relativism about the child in the womb, and of course, well, that makes it bigger because there is another person. Oh, there's that noise, the beautiful music. Well, I got to come back once again next time with more of Bishop Purcell. Remember, July 23rd out at St. James of the Sag. I'm Father Tom Coyes, guest host on the Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WFSI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ and on 88.5 FM WFSI.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is wrought. It's time to be stirred. time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide.